You're listening to LGRadio.online. Welcome to In the Benny Green Archives.
The music in 1925 was usually written in a hurry, in a hotel room, in a frenzy of creativity. None of it was built to last, but lots of it did last. I doubt very much if Walter Donaldson, when he composed Yes Sir That's My Baby, was worried about whether the music fanciers of 1985 would bother with it. Had he known the song was to become a standard, he would have been pleased for a moment, but then he would have gone on with the more pressing business of the day, at the races or in a bar. But Donaldson, like most of his professional rivals, couldn't have known that his profession was on the brink of one of those revolutions which pick people up and fling them thousands of miles against their will. Technological revolutions which destroy one industry and create another. In 1925, there were no talking pictures. And that meant songs were to be found either on primitive radio or in live theatre. And the centre of live theatre was Broadway. 10 years later, Walter Donaldson was one of hundreds of writers who took the advice of Horatio Alger, go west, young man. Some of the composers weren't so young at that, but they all went. The contracts were lucrative, and if they never got the satisfaction of sitting at the back of the stalls watching some shantuzzi singing their latest, they could console themselves with the thought that their music was being heard simultaneously in three or four continents. And after all, the actual nature of the work hadn't changed. Donaldson was famous for his vagueness about how you write a song. He was once quoted as saying, well, first I get the scope of the song and then I kind of scope it out. Well, 10 years after Yes Sir That's My Baby, Donaldson was still scoping it out, only on the West Coast. At this point, I'm going to cheat slightly and play something Donaldson wrote in 1934, my excuse being that it never reached England till 1935. The words are by Gus Kahn, and you only have to hear a few bars to realise that switching coastlines had affected Donaldson's ability not at all.
I've had my moments. I must confess my fleeting moments of tenderness. I sang of true love. I played guitars. Then found a new tropical stars. This time's the last time. This time it's new. Love as a pastime.
I've had my moments from that amazing fiasco, Hollywood Party, an MGM production so chaotic that it was the only film in history to co-star Laurel and Hardy and Jimmy Durante and the Three Stooges and Mickey Mouse. You can tell it was a chaos through two vital clues. This was the picture that Rodgers and Hart wrote their first ridiculous version of Blue Moon for, the one where Gene Harlow sings to the creator of the universe. And also because Walter Donaldson collaborated at one point to write a song with a studio publicity chief, who fortunately happened to be Howard Dietz. 1935 was a busy time for the songwriters contracted by the studios. In that year, Warren and Dubin, slaving away in their gilded cells for the frontal lobotomy executives in Warner Brothers, produced music for 9 movies. And in every case, the smell raised by the movie has long since faded, while the bouquet of the songs still deliciously lingers. There was a number in one of these 9 turkeys, everybody knows. The film told of a New York taxi driver who gets fed up with earning an honest living and decides to become a radio singer instead. So some idiot sends him to Venice, where he is last heard yodeling away to his heart's content. Dick Powell played a demented taxi driver, but what do we care today, except for that one remarkable piece of Dapper Dan philosophy written by Al Dubin, who deployed his vast knowledge as a womanizer to the composition of this lyric.
Gotta get my old tuxedo pressed, gotta sew a button on my vest, cause tonight I gotta look my best, Lulu's back in town. Gotta get a half a buck somewhere, gotta shine my shoes and slip my hair, gotta get myself a boutonniere, Lulu's back in town. You can tell all my bets, all those blondes and brunettes, Mr. Otis regrets that he won't be around. Now you can tell the mailman not to call, I ain't coming home until the fall, and I might not get back home at all. Lulu's back in town. You heard about Margie, you heard about Dinah, you heard about Susie, but Lulu. Tonight I've gotta look my best for Lulu. I gotta get a half buck somewhere, gotta shine my shoes and slip my hair, gotta get myself a boutonniere for Lulu. You can tell all my bets, all those blondes and those brunettes, that Mr. Otis regrets that he won't. Tell the mailman not to call, I ain't coming home until the fall, and I might not get back home at all. For Lulu, she's back in town.
Lulu's back in town. By far the best song in Broadway Gondolier, an imbecilic mishmash starring Dick Powell. The wonderful thing, so far as the songwriters of 1935 were concerned, was that Hollywood was convinced that every film had to have songs. I don't recall much tap dancing in Anna Karenina and very little close harmony stuff in David Copperfield, but classics apart, they had to have songs. One of the big hits of 1935 was the song Alone, surrounded by anarchy as the Marx Brothers went to the opera. The executives were in fact so keen for music they even tried to foist off on poor defenseless audiences the sounds of opera. Pandro S. Berman was one who tried that trick. The S in his name never stood for anything, and neither did Berman as far as I could find out. He enjoyed his finest hour in 1935 with the production of Top Hat, which saved RKO from bankruptcy, thereby making it possible for the company to go bankrupt later. Now, I've played the great music from Top Hat so many times, I think just for once I should slip past it and move on to Berman's Dark Night of the Soul, a 1935 epic called I Dream Too Much. Of course, they cheated a bit. Henry Fonda plays an operatic composer who works for years on his opera and finally sees it become successful as, you guessed it, a musical comedy. The part of his singing wife was played by the famous Lily Pons. Miss Pons was famous as the smallest soprano in the world. She was a pretty little thing, 4'10", that's pretty little, but not even the fact that they hired Jerome Kern to write Henry Fonda's songs could save the project, I Dream Too Much, in which incidentally Miss Pons sang Delibes' Bell song from an opera called Lakme. It's said that one day Miss Pons asked the professional gossip header Hopper, do you know Lakme? To which the impeccably educated Miss Hopper replied, "Oh, I like you very much." Further evidence of the 1935 rash of operatic ambition was a really wonderfully terrible picture called Stars Over Broadway, featuring an operatic star called James Milton. He plays a singer who gets into radio but wants to sing opera. The picture ends mercifully with his disappearing into the fleshpots of Italy, where no doubt he's destined to put on 20 stone and to develop into a really great operatic star. That is, a singer who turns up for one performance out of three. Stars Over Broadway is notorious for the butchering of September in the Rain, which was fortunately revived successfully 2 years later. But as an example of the routine work that Dubin and Warren were turning out in 1935, here is a December 35 recording of the best song in the picture.
You told me that I was like an angel, told me I was fit to wear a crown, so that you could get a thrill. You put me on a pedestal and then you let me down. Let me down. You told me that I'd be wearing diamonds, I would have the smartest car in town. Made me think that I'm the top, and then you let the ladder drop. You know you let me down. Let me down. I walked upon a rainbow, I clung on to a star. You had me up in heaven, that's why I had to fall so far. I was even looking for a cottage, I was measured for a wedding gown. That's how I got cynical, you put me on a pinnacle, and then you let me down. Let me down. How you let me down.
Billie Holiday, supported by, among others, Johnny Hodges on alto saxophone, Teddy Wilson piano, and Dave Barber guitar. That song has all the aroma of 1935. Neat four-bar blocks, and one comical blemish from Dubin, who rhymes getting a thrill with pedestal. My next selection from 1935 is still a movie song, but not quite of the same kind. If you look for it in the lists, it didn't get onto the screen till 38, in yet another collapsible production called Love and Hisses. And by the way, if you think I'm being too hard on all these movies by lambing into them, one of the stars of Love and Hisses, Bert Lahr, later described it as a total and utter failure. And so it was, but it incorporated an oddity in the popular song catalogue, a piece which enjoyed tremendous sentimental support and is one of the earliest commercial examples of what we now celebrate as franglais. Now, franglais is not new. In several P.G. Wodehouse novels of the 30s, you can find brilliant examples of the art of mangling two languages at the same time. But not even Wodehouse far outdates the song which appeared in Love and Hisses, but which had begun its life 3 years earlier in 1935. The cabaret and nightclub singer Hildegard had a lady manager called Anna Sozenko. And when I first read all that, I thought what a vivid mid-European picture it conjured up. The svelte Parisian soubrette supervised by some white Russian emigre. Well, it's not quite like that. Hildegard was about as Parisian as Billy Bennett. Her full name was Hildegard Loretta Sell, and she was from Wisconsin. And as for Anna Sozenko, she was as Russian as Hildegard was Parisian. Anna comes from that well-known Russian outpost Camden, New Jersey. And what it all goes to show is that if you've got a bit of style, nobody really cares. In 1935, Anna, giving the lie to the old idea that a manager is good for nothing except giving you 10% of everything you make, wrote Hildegard a song so potent that people have been beguiled by it ever since. The first ever successful marketing of the product we call Franglais.
Darling, je vous aime beaucoup. Je ne sais pas what to do. You know you've completely stolen my heart. Morning, noon, and night time too. Toujours wondering what to do. That's the way I felt right from the start. Ah, chérie, my love for you is très, très fort. Wish my friends were good enough. I tell you so much more, but I hope that you comprehend all the little things you mean to me. Darling, je vous aime beaucoup. I love you. Yes, I do. Wish my friends were good enough. I'd tell you so much more. All the things you mean to me. Darling, je vous aime beaucoup. I love you. Yes, I do.
Darling, je vous aime beaucoup, which has been translated as Darling, I take aim at your boko, which is no worse than something a friend of the family once said and I overheard. In 1936, Hildegard was touring London and becoming very well known, and a relative of mine was asked what she thought of the great Hildegard and said, oh, I've always been crazy about old Hilda. Well, I pass on hastily to the rest of the great songs from 35, with apologies for not playing them all and excusing the omissions by saying I've often played them before. I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter, You Are My Lucky Star, In a Sentimental Mood, Mad About the Boy, and so on. But there are a few songs I really must include, and the first of them is yet another example of how opera kept intruding into Timpanelli, but for once with the most marvellous results. 1935 saw the production of an American masterpiece, in which was included one of the most beautiful ballads of the century.
and the cotton is high.
Song from Porgy and Bess, so pure that some people, when they first hear it, think it's an adaptation of a folk song, whereas it is the very opposite, an art song contrived by the master songwriter of all, George Gershwin. Incidentally, Porgy and Bess flopped in 1935, all the critics combining to attack it for its rotten melodies, including Summertime. All those critics are dead now, but not so Summertime. If 1925 was a New York Tin Pan Alley Broadway year with the publishers and writers located on the East Coast, then 1935 was a Los Angeles Hollywood year with the whole caravan tempted out to the West by the promise of fairy gold. 45 was on the face of it 1935 continued. The big musical pictures were still pouring out and there was no visible threat to the industry. You did hear vague talk of newfangled television, but it was still nothing more than a messy toy. Whereas Hollywood was the most powerful, all-embracing, dominating media of entertainment ever devised. So it looked as if the carnival would never stop. An example, none more remarkable, of how a song was considered essential to the merchandising of a movie is given by one of the great sensation productions of my teens. A detective is called in to investigate the murder of a beautiful model. While poking around her apartment, he falls in love with her portrait. And then, halfway through the picture, she walks in, not murdered at all, just away for the weekend. There were no songs, because this, remember, was a taut, tense thriller. But there was theme music. Theme music so evocative that it actually overshadowed the picture. The millions who saw that picture heard the haunting background music and demanded to know what the words were. So hastily, they called in the usual miracle man to write a lyric which would conform to everybody's preconceived idea of what that lyric should be about. I consider the result one of the most poetic lyrics ever written.
Laura is is the face in the misty light. Footsteps that you hear down the hall. The laugh that floats on a summer night that you can never quite recall. And you see Laura on that train that is passing through. Those eyes, how familiar they seem. She gave your very first kiss to you. That was Laura.
Frank Sinatra singing a lyric which is outstanding even in the context of Johnny Mercer's art. Music by David Raxin. Another good song from 1945 never reached the screen till 1950, when it was thrown away in a June Haver Dan Daly epic called I'll Get By. Every so often I talk of songs which are so constructed that jazz musicians can't get enough of them. Here's one of them.
Kiss me once again. It's been a long, long time. Haven't felt like this, my dear, since can't remember when. It's been a long, long time. You'll never know how many dreams I dreamed about you. Just how empty you. So kiss me once and kiss me twice and kiss me once again. It's been a long, long time. Kiss me once, kiss me twice, kiss me once again. It's been a long, long. Once again, it's been a long, long time. It's been a long, long time.
It's been a long, long time, written by Julie Stein and Sammy Kahn, who, by the way, calculated once that there were 75 words in the lyric and that they paid off initially at $1,000 a word. Nice work if you can get it. 1945 also saw the rifling of the tomb of Mack Gordon's countryman Fred Chopin, who was dragged into a film called A Song to Remember, in which he coughed blood at the keyboard, no doubt just after reading the script, and kept getting upstaged by Merle Oberon as George Sand. To fall for a lady called George is bad enough, but when she literally wears the pants and smokes the cigars, I think things have gone too far. Chopin, alias Cornell Wilde, had been dead by then for so long that his works were at the mercy of every Hollywood producer and New York publisher looking for something for nothing. And in 1945, up came Fred Chopin's biggest hit. Not in the shape of a polonaise or an impromptu or a fantasia, but this.
Till the end of time, long as stars are in the blue, long as there's a spring, a bird to sing, I'll go on loving you. Till the end of time, long as roses bloom in May, my love for you will grow deeper with every passing day. Till the wells run dry and each mountain disappears, I'll be there for you, to care for you, through laughter and through tears. So take my heart in sweet surrender and tenderly say that I'm the one you love and live for till the end of time. Tenderly say that I'm the one you love and live for till the end of time.
That was Chopin's Polonaise number 6 in A-flat major after you take it out in the yard and jump up and down in it for a couple of days. And the people who wrote it, apart from Chopin that is, were Ted Mossman, author of that distinguished song Dingbat the Singing Cat, and Buddy Kay. And Mossman and Kay also tried it on in 1945 with Rachmaninoff. Result, Full Moon and Empty Arms. But the only other really successful bit of grave robbing in 1945 featured Chopin all over again. This time it was the Fantasia Impromptu in C-sharp minor, The Great Burglary of 1919, perpetrated by one Harry Carroll. In 1945, the movie The Dolly Sisters revived it, and there was a marvellous example of the biter bit. Carroll was out, and the composer was now named as Harry Fox. No mention was made of Chopin at all.
I'm always chasing rain. Clouds drifting by, my schemes are just
just like all my dreams ending in the sky. Some fellas look to find the sunshine. I always look to find the rain. Some fellows make a winning sometime. I never even make a gain. Believe me, I'm always chasing rainbows, waiting to find a little bluebird in. To find the sunshine, I always look and find the rain. Some fellas make a winning sometime. I never even make a game. Believe. Chasing rainbows, waiting to find a little bluebird in
the 1945 revival of a revival, I'm Always Chasing Rainbows, adapted, as the saying goes, by either Harry Carroll or Harry Fox. But the prize of a wet sock must go to Mossman and Kay. When they lifted Chopin's tune, they couldn't even think of an original title. Till the End of Time is the name of a song which appeared in a 1933 picture called Broadway Bad. That one was written by Sidney Mitchell and Harry Axt, and I know where they lifted it, from the works of a Victorian poet called Lionel Johnson, who once wrote a piece called By the Statue of King Charles I at Charing Cross. And there occurs in that poem the line, speak after sentence, yea, and to the end of time. When I said earlier that Sammy Kahn was making $1,000 a word out of It's Been a Long, Long Time, that wasn't his entire annual income, you understand. He and Julie Stein also wrote another excellent ballad for a rising singer of the period.
Day by day, I'm falling more in love with you. And day by day, my love seems to grow. There isn't any end to my devotion. It's deeper, dear, by far than any ocean. I find day by day, you're making all my dreams come true. Come what may, I want you to know I'm yours alone, and I'm in love to stay. As we go through the years, day by day, I find that day by day, you're making all my dreams come true.
So come what may, I want you to know that I am yours alone, and I'm in love to stay. As we go through the year, day by day, I said day by day. Day by day.
A vintage Sinatra song written in 1945 by Carl and Stein, and so attractive a song that its title was also lifted many years later by the writers of a musical based loosely on religious themes. It was in 1945 yet again that a ballad turned up which I always think must rank as one of the best of its kind ever written. The background is really rather sad. Sigmund Romberg, who in the 1920s had splashed so happily in the Habsburgian pools of shows like The Desert Song and The Student Prince, and who in the 1930s had been dismayed to find his style was considered passé, spent the early years of the 40s bemoaning his own irrelevance. By the time he died in 1945, he was quite convinced he was a joke figure, unable to cleanse his style of the old Ruritanian overtones, at which point he wrote his masterpiece. It turned up in a Broadway show which opened in January 45 called Up in Central Park. And although the action was set in the 1870s, the music was anything but antiquated. If you hadn't told me that this ballad was Romberg's, I would have sworn it was something by Kern in his later convoluted stage. And higher praise than that I can't think of.
We'll be close as pages in a book, my love and I. So close, we can share a single look, share every sigh. So close, that before I hear your laugh, my laugh breaks through. And when a tear starts to appear, my eyes grow misty too. Our dreams won't come tumbling to the ground, we'll hold them fast. Darling, as the strongest book is bound, we're bound. As pages in a book, never to part.
Close as pages in a book, the 1945 swan song of Sigmund Romberg. I'd like to close this resume with another salute, yet another one, in the direction of Harry Warren. Now, by 1945, Harry Warren was reconciled to life on the West Coast. He'd been there 15 years, he'd won everything that was going, and he was himself by now a kind of Beverly Hills landmark. But he never quite stopped missing the old-time songwriting atmosphere of New York, where the writers would congregate at Lindy's and exchange royalty statements. His partner, Al Dubin, knew how much Warren hankered after the old days, so if I could revert back 10 years to close the review in 1935, Dubin wrote a lyric he knew would please his partner, for the way it wallowed in a Cohan-esque sentiment about the Great White Way. It did more than please Warren, it inspired him to write an Oscar winner which has remained with us ever since.
Come on along and listen to the lullaby of Broadway, the hip hooray and ballyhoo, the lullaby of Broadway, the rumble of the subway train, the rattle of the taxis, the daffodils who entertain at Angelo's and Max.
taxis when a Broadway baby says goodnight. It's early in the morning. Manhattan babies don't sleep tight until the dawn. Good night, baby. Good night. Milkman's on his way. Sleep tight.
Lullaby of Broadway, written in 1935 and still flourishing in the theatres. And that's it. See you same time next week.
Come on along and listen to the Lullaby of Broadway. The hidey-high and boop-a-doo, the Lullaby of Broadway. The band begins to go to town and everyone goes crazy. You rock by your baby round till everything gets hazy. Hush, I'll buy you this and that, you hear a daddy saying. And baby goes home to her flat to sleep all day. Good night, baby. Good night, milkman's on his way. Sleep tight, baby. Sleep tight, let's call it a day. Listen to the lullaby of old Broadway.
You've been listening to In the Benny Green Archives here on lgradio.online. Please do visit the website to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our other shows. This is lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.